The raucous roar of U-Arts flooded the Medeski Stadium for the first time in over 9 months on Saturday as Reading FC fans were welcomed back for a socially distanced special as the Royals beat Nottingham Forest 2-0. Welcome to the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode 243, the Reading FC podcast by fans for fans. And wasn't it nice to have just a couple of thousand of fans back in the Mad Stad on Saturday? And here to discuss it with me, that 2-0 win, is Adam Jones. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Just the two of us tonight, but four unbeaten, and we move on from here.
Well, two is company tonight, two's company with the scoreline, and 2,000's company in the stands. So it's a nice little theme we've got going on. And we'll have in the recap just in a minute, we'll have a few of the fans who went to the game sending in their thoughts just as they left the Mad Stad. Massive thanks to those. So a little something extra to talk about, to hear from in a bit. And just before we go into the recap, as ever, a massive thank you to our Patreon subscribers. We would not be here without people who listen to the podcast. And thank you to all of those who put their hand in their pocket for a little something for ourselves. And we hope to good use in terms of the technology and everything that we use to bring the podcast to. And speaking of which, ZCZ Films, our sponsor, always very happy to have them on board. And for our second season now with them as our sponsor, big thank you to them. So let's go into a recap then and talk about, well, two actually quite different games for Reading FC this week.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Let's cover it off quickly then, Adam. Is the Sheffield Wednesday draw that Reading had on Wednesday night. It was a 1-1 game. Callum Patterson scoring early on for Sheffield Wednesday, balling from the left, headed home. And then Reading got back into it towards the end of the first half with a Lucas Shaw header from a really nice Ovi Ejaria free kick. No one wants to talk about that, though, because it was the case of bad decisions. There was a penalty for, I've got to think of all of these now. There's a penalty for, this is not in order. Sam Baldock had a kick on him as he was going for the ball and the defender got their second. That wasn't given. There was Josh Laurent went down. Arguably, that was the least of the good calls, as it were, as he was kind of pushing his man as he went down. The two best calls, however, Omar Richards undoubtedly pulled down and yet charged for it with a foul against him in the area and at the end of the game, right at the death. A Josh Laurent shot that was goal-bound, handballed by Adam Reach. Referee didn't see it, liner didn't see it, play went on, Reading denied. And Adam, there were a lot of bad decisions in this game, but was it a bad point?
For me, it wasn't a bad point at all. When you look at it, just from the outside, before the game, I think we would have taken a point. I think some of us would anyway, just because of Tony Pulis and just his kind of his reputation as a manager. I think I would have taken a point as well out of Nottingham Forest before the game. I predicted a draw. Two games where the manager's reputation alone, I've been quite, not scared in a way, but you could tell that it was going to be quite a test. There's actually six, I think, contentious calls within the Sheffield Wednesday game. I think the first one was the red card, which I actually thought it was a red card. Because if you give the referee a chance actually to give you a red card, he's going to take that chance. I think one of the calls that he did get wrong in our favour was the push on Richards. Now, Kadeem Harris has obviously, again, given the referee a choice.
That was for the free kick that gave us the equaliser, yes. Wasn't it?
Yeah, that was. It was that one. And he gave the referee a choice because he did put his hands on Richard. But I don't think, you know, as I'm trying to look at this fairly, I don't think it was a foul at all. So that in that sense, you know, it went our way. But I mean, the penalty calls in the second half, the Richards one was definitely a penalty. I have no idea how he's given it the other way. I honestly have absolutely no idea. I thought the handball was definitely a handball. He pretty much caught it, Adam Reach. So I have no idea about that as well. Baldock, you've seen them given. I think it was a penalty, but you've seen them given. You've seen them not given. And the Laurent one, I'll give the referee the benefit of the doubt. But do you know what the game that reminds me of that was the Chelsea versus Barcelona in the Champions League, where there was about four handballs. I think it was one or two from PK. And it just reminded me of that. It was just ludicrous. But overall, to answer your question finally, no, I don't think it was. I don't think it was a bad point at all. I think we should have killed the game off, and I think we should have scored more. But at the end of the day, you know, it kept our run unbeaten, and I think that's one of the most important things for me.
Yeah, I think in the grand scheme of things, obviously, if we miss out by promotion or on promotion by point, then yeah, it's a terrible travesty. But for now, in terms of where we're sat, it's, you know, it's something I can get by on, knowing that the team is good, and that's the more important thing. It wasn't a good performance by referee Oliver Langford, generally speaking. Actually, one of the mailbag emails that I'm going to read out now, Dave Delariviere got in touch saying, it's nice to see Sheffield Wednesday were denied two obvious penalties against Norwich on Saturday. Just a shame it helped the Canaries take top of the table. And actually, funnily enough, on the weekend as well, that Oliver Langford was getting pelters for a red card early on in Blackburn versus Brentford. So it comes around and goes around. And Reading, I'm not sure we've really benefited from a bad decision just yet. Although I did see Sheffield Wednesday fans saying that it wasn't a foul that brought Reading's goal about. Although Sheffield Wednesday fans, when they were, I can't remember who it was on Twitter saying, what do we think as Sheffield Wednesday fans about this? A lot of them replied saying, oh, the third one, well, that wasn't a penalty. The first two were, weren't they? So, you know, that's just how it is. And we'll have to leave it behind and move forward, because this is the thing that everyone wants to talk about, is the Nottingham Forest game, and really a good refereeing decision. Because I don't know about you, Adam, but in real time, I didn't see this handball from Ryan Yates, that the Forest player on the line handballing it. The ball came in, Tom Holmes challenging Bree Samba, the Forest goalkeeper. Ball pops up in the air. The players follow it in. Yates handballs it, clears it off the line. That's why it doesn't go in. I actually kind of thought, you know, the referee's blown up. I thought he was just going to blow it up for a Tom Holmes foul. It wasn't that. It was a handball, and it was a really good decision.
Yeah, at first, I'm exactly the same as you, Mark. I thought he'd blown up for a foul on Bryce Samba, because I thought, you know, looking at it in real time, I thought that Holmes was perhaps a bit too aggressive in getting in front of Samba, but it wasn't like that at all. It was almost like an illusion, really. And Samba's fumbled it really badly. And it looks to me that he didn't know that Holmes was coming in. And obviously, Holmes has done very well to get to the ball, and he almost, you know, bundled it over the line. And I'm actually gutted for him that, you know, it didn't go over the line. But for us, I mean, to get that red card, it was an advantage anyway. And, you know, I was 99% sure that Lucas Zhao was going to convert that spot kick. I've just got that confidence in him at the moment. And I honestly think it was a fantastic call by the ref, you know, completely contrasted with the game against Wednesday on Wednesday. It was a fantastic call, and probably one of the reasons why I don't think we should still have VAR in the Championship, because, you know, sometimes you get good calls, sometimes you get bad calls, and, you know, sometimes it's just the way the cookie crumbles, and that's what makes it a part of football, just like the fans.
Well, I'm certainly, as I say, waiting for Reading to get their awful call that goes in their favour. So we'll wait and see for the Sheffield Wednesday game coming bound back to Reading's favour. As you say, Lucas Zhao with the penalty. That's his 14th goal of the season. He's got 11 in the league. In the league, he hasn't scored a brace. So he scored 11 in 11 games. There's only four games which he's not scored in, which is quite a spectacular run from Lucas Schell. That's the epitome of consistency, I think. And I think as is right to name check the referee Gavin Ward with the correct decision for the penalty. So credit to him, and well done for some good refereeing on the weekend. And really from there, this game, I mean, easy formality. These are the sort of words which I'm pretty confident in using. Reading had 65% of possession, 24 shots to 2, 7 corners to 3. Elise and Ajari are very impressive in creating things. Renamoto and Laurent kept things, you know, I think they kept a lid on things really well. There's a particular moment in the second half when both of them had to track back and follow a man to the corner flag and did it really well. Great teamwork. It just worked out quite well for Reading, and it was nice to give the players, obviously you got that man advantage, but to have the freedom for Elise and Ajari in those positions, there was a lot of creativity on show.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I've got down on my notes, you know, would we have actually won without that red card? I mean, I think we would have, strictly because I think it would have been like the Bristol City game, in the fact that, you know, they may have come back to equalise, but I think we have the attacking prowess to go on and win games. I was thinking about this the other day, and ideally you'd want two on each of our front four. Ajaria, just because of how skillful he is, and the key passes that he can make, just those, you know, amazing passes through the middle and to unlock championship defences. You'd want two on Elise because of the energy, and again, some of the passes that he's pulled off has just been magnificent. And I don't have the words in my vocabulary to just describe him, because he's been fantastic. And, you know, I was speaking to my mate, and he said, you know, watching him in real life and watching him live, it's just, you know, brilliant to see him. For Mate, you'd want two on him, just for the pace and the threat that he can provide as well in front of goal. He seems to get himself in the right position. There was a chance in the first half, actually, where he nearly slotted in. He didn't realise he had the amount of time that he did. Otherwise, I think he would have converted the ball home. And Lucas Zhao, just say no more about Lucas Zhao. You'd want two on him as well, just because of, you know, his strength and his, you know, goal scoring prowess. He's just been fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very happy with Lucas Zhao as well, because, you know, he's just that complete striker that we have been missing for ages. And I now feel confident that things will happen up front.
You know, I think that the more men, the more markers that defences put on Lucas Zhao, the happier I am, because he can take six men out of a game with his hold-up play, and that opens up space for others. And that's the danger with Zhao, isn't it? That he can turn on a sixpence. He's strong. He's got the finish in him. He knows where the goal is. He's obviously full of confidence at the moment. Does he? I say it the way, he's got that Dave Kitson vibe about him at the moment for me. Of those, you know, just the bulky frame, and yet as it, his control of the ball is magnificent. His technique in front of goal is undoubted. So really enjoying Lucas Zhao at the moment. I'm really enjoying Tom Holmes at the moment as well, at right back. Dave's email that I just read out, he's saying he can't wait for Tom Holmes to get his first goal. It's coming. Well, he almost had it with that penalty incident. He almost had it with it in the second half. He got teed up on the D and had a really clean strike that I think was deflected behind, and you could see it in his face. He was gutted it did, because he knew it was, he had a really good chance of going into the back of the net. And this is just the good thing about Reading at the moment, is that we've got players like Thomas Estevez, Sam Baldock, Sonny Aluko. You know, two of those players are really experienced championship players who can fill in holes. One of those is a promising youngster. There's just a lot of quality in this squad at the moment that we, you know, I don't like saying, oh, we haven't had it for years, because we all know that, but it's a new thing for Reading to be able to harness this.
It feels like very much like a fresh start. You know, we had a big clear out in the summer. We needed to have that big clear out in the summer, just because of our wage bill was, what was that, over 40 million or something like that, which is absolutely ridiculous. But no, I mean, and going back to the point about Holmes, I have a feeling I know how he's going to score. I think he'll come back round the back post and put one in. I think so. And it might not even be with his head. But I think he'll come round the back post and score. In fact, he was almost caught out by Lyle Taylor in the same sort of situation defensively. But no, he does actually look like an attacking threat as well. So, yeah, I think it's good that we've got the players that we've got. I think we've got a good mix of youth and experience. Some of the players that we brought in, it just, you know, it proves that we don't have to spend a lot of money sometimes. Laurent is a free signing from Shrewsbury. Considering that he's had the new manager as well, Paunovic, and he's adapting to a new league, he's just been outstanding with Rinomoto in the centre. And credit to Rinomoto as well for guiding him. And Michael Morrison has been invaluable to us. Spoke well after the game on Saturday against Nottingham Forest. You know, Yezom's a free transfer, Raphael. So it just proves really that we don't have to spend a lot of money. As long as the mix is right in the squad and as long as the team morale is up, which, you know, judging by Mate's early Instagram, videos, a few months ago, It just shows that we have the right ingredients there. And for the first time in ages, I feel like we've got a settled squad. And I just feel very content. And maybe that's because we've been in good form, but it just feels right. It feels like a fresh start. And I guess that's fitting, really, with fans being back in the stadium because of COVID-19. Everything's a fresh start. And we'll give it a go again, despite our kind of failures in the past 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about the amount spent on this team, given obviously wages are probably going to be relatively decent, but in terms of transfer fees, you've got Ajaria and Zhao. Everyone else was pennies, really. Liam Moore, probably a couple hundred grand went on him, but you know, for the quality of defender, it's not very much. You've got a lot of free agents in there, a couple of academy kids. It's worked out really well to have that, you know, align and show that, yeah, this team isn't, it's probably got a decent amount of wages behind it, but in terms of transfer fees, not too much. And the final thing then, obviously, the probably even more important than the result was the fact that 2,000 fans were able to go back into the Madstad on the weekend. So let's finish up by talking about that. And I must say that feeling, or the listening out for the players coming out, Nottingham Forest players got a semi-warm round of applause, which was quite nice. The fans obviously knew what was coming then, because the Reading players came out and the UR's roar was brilliant. It was really visceral. It was such a emotional moment for fans, whether you're watching at home or inside the stadium, to be able to hear that. And there have been a couple of moments like that, just to pick out a couple of random moments I've noticed since fans have returned. I've watched the Luton highlights when they beat Norwich in midweek, and it sounded like a full stadium. That sounded brilliant. I was also really impressed with in the North London derby hearing the Spurs fans go marching in, and that was, I thought both of those moments were really good. But the Reading moment of having that first URS, having it on TV as well, was really impressive. And I think the fans showed a really good light on the club. And it was a really good moment to have them back in the stands.
Yeah, and, you know, we can't forget that football's an escape for a lot of us. I think a lot of us identify with being in the category of being, you know, of seeking that escape. You know, forget the finances at the club, forget, you know, some of the other problems we've had in the past couple of years. You know, people want to get away from their, you know, everyday lives and the general stresses that come with it. You know, they want to get away from, you know, Brexit and COVID and just, you know, sitting in front of the TV for the past 9 months. And, you know, it's just fantastic to have the fans back. We actually sounded very good on the TV, as you said. I think, you know, it didn't sound like we had 2,000 fans there. It sounded like we had more. But I guess that's what comes with, you know, the fans that have racked up God knows how many loyalty points, over 4,000 or something. You know, it's absolutely fantastic, you know, their loyalty. And I'm so grateful as well that their loyalty over the years has been rewarded. And, you know, I don't want to just congratulate the club on how they handled the actual day itself. I want to congratulate them on their fair ticketing structure, because, you know, this could have been an absolute disaster, like the Red Nose Day thing, with the red shirts and the one-off replicas. But, you know, they did absolutely brilliantly to get fans back, offer tickets to, I wouldn't say the right people, but offer tickets to those who deserve it the most, and then work their way back. And no, sooner rather than later, I really do hope that that we can all come back, you know. And, you know, if it means that we have to persist with this a little while longer before we have fans back, rather than rushing us all in at once, then, yeah, I'll take that 100%. But, you know, fair play to the club on this one, because and fair play to the fans who went, because, you know, I know it's a bit different, but you got behind the boys and you sounded absolutely brilliant on television.
No, absolutely. And I would say, actually, if you compared a couple of other grounds, you kind of looked around, the fans were a bit more spread out of the grounds. Reading certainly abiding by regulations in what they did. I'm certainly not suggesting it's bad in any way. But Reading's fans were kind of more packed in than in other places. And that did, you, I think the Medeski Stadium, generally speaking, is a really good ground to make atmosphere in. We've seen that when we fancy doing it every now and again, and certainly more recently. But yeah, I think it's conducive to really good atmosphere. And we have, to round off the recap, we usually just hear from Veljko Paunović and what he said to the club media. But this week we've got something a little bit different. We've got a selection of fans. We did a call out onto the Twitter for fans to send in their thoughts and emotions as they went in. So we're going to be hearing from a few of those now. But first of all, we're going to be hearing from a person who's not a fan, but someone who we were all absolutely delighted when the club sent us an email on Saturday night saying that Veljko Paunović had recorded the Tala, sent a little message of thanks for the fans' return, which was absolutely unexpected and absolutely a real privilege to have him do that. So thank you very much for Veljko Paunović. So to kick off the selection of clips we've got from fans who visited the Mad Stad on Saturday, let's start then with the manager.
Hello everyone, this is Pauno. I want to thank everyone for coming today to this game to support the team and to be the part, a big part of our win and 3 points. I also want to thank everyone who didn't have the opportunity to come and watch the game and supported the team from the distance, and a special thanks to our fans from the Tilehurst end. It was great to be back. It was great to have you here, and looking forward to our future games and wins together. Thank you.
And kicking off the fans, we'll hear from the Tilehurst end editor, Simeon Pickup.
I've just got in from the Forest game, and it really was a wonderful afternoon, being able to have a match day again, finally a proper match day. It hasn't been the same in the last couple of months, kind of waking up, eventually loading up iFollow, loading up Twitter on the desktop. It's not the same as a proper match day, and it's not just being at the stadium, it's getting ready to leave at the beginning of the day, it's getting on the train, having that buzz of anticipation as you pull into Reading, as you get the bus to the stadium, and it's those little things that add up that you don't know that you miss when you don't have it, but then when you get them back, you do appreciate just how special it all is. And it's even little things in the match as well. I mean, obviously the celebrating the goals was fantastic, and seeing Paolo come over and applaud the fans for the first time as Reading manager really was special. But it's little things like Sam Baldock, a bit of shithousery from him, throwing the ball away when Forrest had won a throw-in, and seeing the fans laugh at it and enjoy it. It's those little things that you don't pick up on Twitter, you don't pick up on iFollow, and I've really missed it, and I'm absolutely delighted to have it back, and it just feels like a proper special day, as it always was and as it always should be. And hopefully we'll get into a situation where you get more fans in, you get away fans in as well, and we get to go on away days as well. But as a way to start things off in terms of getting fans back in the ground, this was really, really lovely, and I'm delighted for everyone that managed to get in there, and hopefully for everyone that didn't manage to get in there, hopefully you can get in sooner rather than later.
And now let's hear from Waldemar Janajak.
So here we are, up in the east stand. Usually I sit on the other side of the pitch, in the west stand, so it's a very different view. We seem to be much closer to it all. And I must say, it's an absolute privilege to be here. I mean, it feels so special. Everything about it, from the weird setup at the stadium to the fans. You know, we're clapping basically every time any Reading player touches the ball. Booing Knockhart in particular every time he touches the ball. And it all feels sort of extra active, as if it's the first football game we've ever been to. And the other thing about being on this side is you get to see our left-hand side in action, and that means a lot more of a Aria and Elise playing together, and Richards, and I mean, they are just turning it on. It's like watching ballet, not football, I tell you. So it's a very exciting thing. And of course, the penalty, absolutely clear cut. Should have got one at the last game at Sheffield, we all know that. But it was a foregone conclusion that it would go in, so that cheered us up a lot. I mean, we're trying to sing, we're trying to do the best we can. We're a little bit thin on the ground, but I think we're making up for it with all-round enthusiasm. And the other thing that's different about there not being all the fans here is you can absolutely hear everything on the pitch. I mean, lots of people have pointed this out before, but I mean, you get to hear particularly how much shouting Moore does in a game. I mean, he hasn't stopped all game. Yeah. He's shouting all the time, patience, patience. defence and then attack and organising everybody with his deep liony voice. So it's a slightly different experience, but it's actually, if anything, slightly more interesting and more exciting. You get a bigger shape, you get a better sense of the sort of shape of the whole team. Anyway, absolute privilege to be here. It's half time, we're leading 1-0. I'm very, very, very excited. Can't wait for the second half. You are! Come on, you are!
And this is Ben Thomas.
I think the overwhelming emotion of today has been one of kind of, you know, sheer positivity, really. The club have done incredibly well to kind of get this sorted as quickly as they'd needed to in terms of selling tickets and putting the routines in place for people to be safe and secure and kind of socially distanced, really. You know, it kind of surprised me because I didn't think I missed it as much as I did, and kind of walking through the concourse and kind of going to the stadium to my seat, it was just, you know, it's just incredible to be back and experiencing, you know, live football firsthand and kind of seeing the players play the way that they've been playing. And yeah, you know, the result was fantastic and going back to the top of the table was kind of the icing on the cake. But, you know, the you cannot underestimate the effect of live football on people. The atmosphere was fantastic. You wouldn't have known there was 2,000 people in there, really. You know, at times it was incredibly loud. I think moving forward, you know, the more people that can get in, the better, really, and kind of experience it once again. But, you know, hats off to the club. It was a really, really well-run day. Everything was done very securely and safely and quickly, really. So, you know, roll on the next game, roll on the next 3 points, and let's get as many people back as we possibly can.
And Harry Chafer also sent in his thoughts.
Well, that was very, very enjoyable. Emotions were all over the place going into the game. It's like every other fan. It's been 9 months, hasn't it, since we were last in the Mad Stad. So to finally walk back through those gates, albeit in a very different fashion, you know, with all the social distancing, only 2,000 of us were let in and so on. Even so, it was just incredible feeling to be back. And then the boys did the job on the pitch as well, so you can't really ask for much more than that. I'm lucky as well that I'll be back here on Wednesday night. They're like buses, aren't they? You wait 9 months for one and then two come along at once. But yeah, it's unbelievable. Just such a good feeling. And yeah, so long may it continue. And I hope that we're not going back into these kinds of restrictions that we've been used to, and this is the start of something a lot better and a lot better for all of the fans, and hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later that we'll all be back. So yeah, brilliant feeling, brilliant 3 points, brilliant everything, just really happy, and I'm sure I'm not the only one in that boat. So yeah, great stuff.
And last but not least, a big thank you to everyone who sent in their messages. This is Nikhil Kepler, who sent in his thoughts as he went back to the Mad Stad for the first time in 9 months.
So yeah, I've just got home, having watched our 2-0 win at Forest. Again, first half I thought we were fantastic. Really controlled the game really well. It was nice to be back, you know, that second before the goal where you see it hit back of the net, and then the roar is something that I think every fan has missed. And yeah, me more, no more than anybody else. Again, the atmosphere, I think, it took a while to build up. I think it's something that, you know, over the course of the next few games, and hopefully as we get more fans in, it can build again. Yeah, because, I mean, there's definitely times where I'm not sure you could have told there were fans in, but, I mean, that's not to be understandable. As I said, we haven't been in the stadium for nine months or so. So, yeah, hopefully going forward we can build on that. And yeah, this is a great performance from the team and really glad to be back. And hopefully, you know, more fans can come in, you know, the Birmingham game and stuff. And yeah, it's just really great to be back.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Right, mailbag time. It's always a pleasure, as I say. Massive thank you to everyone who got in touch for the fan clips. Massive thank you to Paolo. Massive thank you to the club for that, and to the mailbag again. Always brilliant. We've gotten a lot. Certainly, the mailbag's been busier this year. It's probably been a biggest time of the biggest feature it's been for a number of years for the club. And I suppose we usually got loads of messages when Reading were doing badly. And if they're doing kind of average, we got none. And it's good to know that when they're doing well, we get some messages. So thank you for that on the Twitter and the Facebook and on the tylerstend@gmail.com. Starting us off, SDS asking, which of the current squad would you choose to be marooned on an island with? Adam, I'll let you take a first shot at this one.
It's a toss-up between three for me. I think Ovi Ejaria, if I was stranded on an island, because he always manages to get himself out of impossible situations against defenders. He managed to, you know, put the ball past them and somehow get past them. And Elise's become that type of player as well to get past players. I think Liam Moore as well for his leadership. I mean, I wasn't there on Saturday. I did hear him a little bit on the TV, but again, I was speaking to my friend and he was saying, you know, the thing that stood out for him the most was Moore's leadership and you know, he was pretty much shouting all the time. So that's impressive. And perhaps that's one of the main reasons why we've missed him so much when he's not been in the squad. Now, I've doubted him before, but, you know, he's really stepped up this season and, you know, fair play to him for doing that. And I think Yaku Mate is also in the frame because, you know, the way he improves team morale, it looks like anyway, just from the surface, you know, I can't, you know, make a real judgment on this because I'm only seeing Instagram clips. But, you know, I think you can really tell that he has a really good impact, you know, both in terms of on the pitch matters and off the pitch matters as well. So it is between three. But I would probably, for practicality, because I think Ejaria is quite a quiet character, I'm going to go for Liam Moore just for his leadership. And I think he might be able to get us out of this situation. And also, you know, after the, you know, we lost about, was it four or five games in a row? I think it was four. And, you know, we managed to get out of that tricky situation. And now we're in the position that we're in. So, no, just for that alone, I think for me, I have to go with Liam Moore. What about you?
Yeah, I can certainly understand where you're going with the practicalities of it. I really agree with you, Yaku Mate assessment there. He was someone, I must admit, I had doubts on him when he was first couple of years at the club, on the pitch and off the pitch, kind of didn't give me the impression of, you know, someone that I really, you know, was invested in. I'm not going to lie, there's no particular reason I felt that, but just a couple of things I wasn't keen on. And he's totally proven to me in the last couple of years in particular that he's a brilliant person to have around the club, whether he's matured, whether I've just, you know, taken a liking to his Instagram more often these days. But yeah, no, I really do think that he's that fun, good guy to have around, positive attitude, brings people together. You see, certainly on social media and everything, he's big one for the fans and keeping, you know, does little competitions and everything like that. So he loves having the support and he loves being part of that. So I'd say that he's a good person to keep the positivity high. The other person, I mean, if I was allowed a PlayStation, I'd probably have Tom McIntyre because he's damn good at the Call of Duty and everything like that. Keep up with his Instagram. He's constantly streaming and everything like that. And he's a pretty handy player as well. So he'd be pretty decent if you could get a Wi-Fi connection and a screen out there, which might be a bit much to ask. But there you go. Luke, next question in the mailbag then. He said, how would you manage the transfer window? Would you send back a couple of the current loans and get possibly a winger, defensive or attacking midfielder? He's named Joe Piggott as someone who's floating around and being linked. I personally think that you don't send back any of the loans because you don't know when you're going to need them. You don't know if you know, Liam Moore's going to break his leg tomorrow and Tom McIntyre or Tom Holmes, you know, they might have a knock and you suddenly need Lewis Gibson. If he does well, you keep him in and you keep going on. That's why you have these players for the whole season. So I think you keep hold of them. And then I think really I probably pour my resources into a real high-class winger, someone who is fully, you know, committed to being a wide player who can get the ball into the box. Because even now, we are still kind of plugging square pegs into round holes on the flanks. Yaku Mate is a good winger. Ovi Ejaria is a good winger. Michael Elise is definitely more of a central player for me. But after that, you're looking at Sonny Aluko, good player, not promotion material. I think there's probably someone to go for in that category. And really, Adam, I think that if we are doing well, there's a chance that the owners are going to be happy to spend a bit more than they would have thought of.
Yeah, and I think it all depends as well on whether, you know, the EFL profit and sustainability rules are frozen or not. You know, if they are, I think that the owners will spend big. I would possibly bring in two. I might bring in a striker on loan, because I'm not sure how long George Puskás is going to be out for. I think he has a hernia, which, you know, doesn't sound very good. But just for the fact of that as well, if Lucas Joao gets injured, we have Bulldog who can step up, but he's not going to be that kind of Joao figure. And we have Onan as well, who came from, I think it was Brentford B, and is yet to make his debut, even though he's been on the bench, which is quite promising for him. So I might bring in a striker on loan, depending on how Puskás is doing. I would also agree with you. I'd bring in a winger. The thing is, and the massive problem is going to be when Swift comes back, because then you're going to have, you know, in that attacking three, just behind Joao, you're going to have Elise, you're going to have Mate, you're going to have Ajaria, you've got, you know, Swift who's going to come back, and, you know, you've got quite a few options there, but we don't have that winger, and that's the problem. And we also have a Luko as well. I forgot about him, but he can also fill in there. But yeah, we don't have that, you know, that winger who can, you know, terrify championship defences. I think I said this earlier on in the season. You know, we need a replacement for Mo Barrow, even though he hasn't played much for Reading over the past couple of years. And he didn't before he moved on permanently to South Korea. But we do need someone who can, you know, get round the back of defences. And maybe that was what we were missing against Sheffield Wednesday to unlock them. I do feel like we need that that kind of different avenue to go down instead of just going straight down the middle, because over time that becomes very very difficult to do, and it becomes very predictable. And similarly, that was how Yapstan was kind of found out, because they kind of, you know, the opposition found out what, you know, what we were doing. And in the first season, when we were playing that football and got to the playoff final, you know, his style of football and what he was doing was completely new and unexpected. But moving on to the loanees, the current loanees that we have, I do agree with you. I think it would be good to keep Lewis Gibson, because he actually did all right in the last 5 or 10 minutes at the weekend. And even though he only played, you know, a mini cameo, I'm delighted for him, because of, you know, he had an absolute nightmare against Stoke City at the end there. So I hope it will go some way to bolster his confidence, and he will also be, you know, a backup for Omar Richards. And if Richards gets injured and we send Gibson back, I think we have, is it Bristow and Samuels? I might be forgetting someone, but I think those are the next two options we have, and they have, you know, a very limited amount of first team experience. In terms of Estevez as well, I would probably keep him, even though, you know, when Yeardom and Araruna come back, we'll be absolutely stopped there to the, you know, we'll be well stopped there. But I think I would keep Estevez, see how he does in training. And if we're not paying too much as well on in terms of wages on him, then, you know, we may as well keep him. But there might be a few even departures. I mean, you think of Tenai Watson, who's not getting a look in, even with the amount of injuries we have at right back. You know, Paunovic would prefer a centre back to be right back instead of Watson being there. So I think that says a lot about his future at the club, unfortunately, because, you know, he looked good in 2016-17. I can't lie to you, you know, against Arsenal and that. But he just seems to have kind of gone off the boil a bit. Sam Walker, I think his time's up at the club. I think he did very well, and I was very happy for him in the Cardiff City replay in the FA Cup last season, for him to save a penalty. But I think perhaps it's his time to go now. Southwood has made the step up. And now Anderson as well. He's done very well at, I think it was Exeter, whilst he was there, and he got a good reception. So fair play to him as well. And one other player that I would think of as well is Sam Smith, when he comes back on loan from Tranmere. And I think he comes back in January. I think he might be another player to go, unfortunately. But I think one other thing that we need to do is get some of the contracts sorted. You know, Richards is out of contract in the summer. McIntyre is out of contract in the summer. And hopefully we can extend, you know, the contracts of maybe Elise and Holmes as well, because they've become key parts of the first team squad.
Yeah, and that's what JL actually has tweeted us, saying, to what lengths do you go to keep Elise and Richards? And Elise, he's got a contract till 2022. I can't imagine we would be able to sign him up until the summer, because from a player point of view, you're going to be aware of the interest. You're going to be aware of Reading's ability to give you more money if you get promoted, or, you know, you might fancy staying in, even if they stay and go to the Championship. And Richard's out of contract in the summer. Really, it's just a matter of, I think, biding our time with this. Like if either of those players want to sign on, they're brilliant, but I don't imagine that they necessarily would at this point. Let their football do the talking and see what happens at the end of the season. And hopefully, you'd certainly think if Reading get promoted, there'll be some new contracts. Will be comfortably sorted out there. As you mentioned earlier on, actually, John Swift is in the mailbag. Dave McCormack saying, where does Swift fit into this team? And John saying, does Swift start when he's back? It'd be harsh to replace any of Ajari, Elise, and Mate, given their form, and you cannot break up the Laurent Rhino partnership where were he to play any deeper. Equally, he's one of our best players. And this is one of the things, I think we spoke about this last week, that I think it's a really good thing that John Swift comes back into this team, because it continues to give Paunovic options. It gives him the option if Sheffield Wednesday, for example, we're 1-1 in that game, you put Swift on the off the bench, or Ajari on off the bench for Laurent or Rhino, because you don't need them both. And then you can start him in the, you know, midweek games, rotating players. Elise can play on the wing, Ajari can play on the wing. Mate can play up front if something happens to Jao. I think John Swift coming back into this team is a really good thing, because it's the one thing, as I said earlier, when you've got players like Luko on the bench, it's good. But having Swift, the experience and the talent is even better. And I think, I mean, Adam, would you start Swift in this team at the moment, or are you happy to keep him as a bench option to begin with?
Bench option for me, 100%. I think I totally agree with the last comment. The fact that I think Rinomota and Laurent, you can't take either of them out. They need to come as a pair. Like Aluko and Estevez seem to come as a pair. But Rinomota and Laurent, you can't break them up. It's an absolute non-negotiable for me. I think we've spent a couple of years trying to get that right balance in midfield and trying to be, you know, defensive in some ways, but actually getting that right balance in there. And I think we've finally found it with Josh Lauren and Rinomota. I think both of them really complement each other well. And as you mentioned earlier, that particular moment in the, I think it was the second half on Saturday, where, you know, I think it was Laurent didn't quite get the ball, but Rinomota came across and absolutely won that ball. So, yeah, I totally agree with that last comment about not breaking them up. In terms of having him perhaps in that three, I mean, it's possible. But I think it would be harsh to take either Elise Ajaria or Mate out. I really do. I think it would be harsh. So for me, I would start him on the bench, especially as we try and ease him back in from a longish term injury. I think it would be good to have him as a bench option, easing in gradually. But it'll be very good competition. And it's quite unbelievable to think that, you know, we had a $6 million offer for John Swift in the summer, and we've, you know, managed to cope in the last couple of months without him. And that's not to say that he's not a very good player, because he absolutely is. You know, I think he is worth, you know, every part of, you know, $6 million or $7 million. But I would keep him on the bench at the moment. And then, you know, whoever plays the best in training, you know, that week gets the nod. And I believe, you know, especially as Paunovic likes taking Elise in and out of the team, I think that, you know, the return of Swift will be a positive either way. I don't think you can lose in this situation.
No, that's the thing. And I thought he was our best player last season, but certainly in the first half of last season. So to have him back in the mix, I think he can play in that deeper two. He can play up in the number 10 role, which I think that was where he was playing off the striker at the start of the season before the injury. He didn't play necessarily his best football there, but that's certainly somewhere that Paunovic thinks he can play. Now, the Media Mental tweeting us in saying, why do commentators pronounce Josh Laurent like he's French? He's from Leytonstone, which is a very good point. I myself fall foul continuously. I call him both, basically. I think I call him Laurent sometimes, and Laurent, another sentence. So, yeah, well, I must admit I'm a bit hazy on that one, but it is a bugbear. My kind of bugbear is if you watch European football, that certain commentators decide to put an accent on as they say someone's name, which I don't think Spanish commentators do when they say Jack Grealish's name, to put it mildly. So, yeah, no, it's a weird one as to how that ends up. But Alistair saying, what should the target be for this season now? I think there was a real chance of playoffs. Now the situation, 16 games have gone now, Championship. We're nudging quite quickly towards halfway. 30 points Reading are on, plus 7 goal difference. They're behind Bournemouth on goal difference. They're third at the moment. Bournemouth second, Norwich on 31 points, 1 point ahead, top of the table. You don't have to go, you don't have to take many points off to drop out of the playoffs. If Reading would have lost to Nottingham Forest, for example, they'd be seventh. So there's only 3 points between Reading in third and Bristol City in eighth. You can take away 6 points and go down to Middlesbrough in 10th. So quite a healthy gap to there. But this is the Championship. It's going to be mega competitive. You look at the teams that aren't in the playoffs at the moment that are still good. Cardiff are still good. Middlesbrough have Warnock. Blackburn have been good. Even further down, you can look at teams like Millwall are difficult to beat. Good defence. Preston are good at scoring. They've beaten us. Good enough team. There's a lot of difficult teams when it comes to that playoff race. I think my personal target at the moment, it has to be playoffs. I don't really think that you could look at this position and say sixth place would be a disappointment, because then, whatever happens, happens. Obviously, we all want the same thing. But, Adam, if I was to offer you at this moment in time sixth place, would you say that would be something you wouldn't want?
No, I think I'd bite your hand off 100%, because I think, I think it was only a week or two ago where there was like 4 or 5 points separating first place and 10th place. It just shows that the Championship is one of the most competitive and one of the best leagues in the world, for me anyway. But I guess I'm biased. But yeah, I think anything below mid-table would signify or suggest that we haven't played well for the remainder of the season. And I think for me, if there's anything below, I think Simeon at the start of the season on our roundtable said 10th, and I thought he was being optimistic. But I think, anything above 10th would be very good, I think, for this season. I think we've got to remember that this season was going to be kind of another season of stability, especially in the fans' minds. I think it was, it's good that we kind of build our way up slowly. But no, I'd absolutely bite your hand off now for a playoff place. Even though we're doing very well at the moment, I think I'm just being perhaps too cautious, perhaps, very cautious. But no, I think, we haven't got, I don't want to put too much expectation on the players. So I think if we continue to play, without pressure and continue to do the things that have got us in this position in the first place, then I'm sure we'll be absolutely fine at the end of the season. It does feel a bit like Yap Stam season in 2016-17, where we got third. And if we get anything like that again, then I'll be absolutely delighted. But no, I'm full of hope, but I'm not going to place too much expectation on the players because of just because of the last few seasons, to be honest. So yeah, I'd take anything from about 10th up, but hopefully, and fingers crossed, we'll get playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, this week is going to be quite an interesting one in terms of looking at how things are going to shake down. We've got Swansea Bournemouth, that's fourth versus second on Tuesday. On the weekend, we've got Cardiff, Swansea, Norwich go to Blackburn. There's difficult games in that this week, and not necessarily for Reading, which we'll cover a bit later on. So I think for now, I remember there was a conversation on BBC Barks, so this must have been like the Preston game or something, where they were saying, would you take fourth? And a couple of people saying no. Honestly, there's no real difference between finishing third to sixth, having, the fans potentially are going to be back in full force by May. I'd like to think they are, but even so, the home advantage in playoffs isn't the most important thing in the world. I've seen Reading teams that have home advantage in the second leg completely fluff it, and I've seen Reading teams that have away advantage in the second leg go and win it. So, yeah, you want as many points on the board as possible, but between third and sixth, it's six, one, half a dozen, I think. Second and first, it's just so difficult to be better than a Norwich team that have been in the Premier League and have won the Championship a couple of years ago. So difficult to beat a Bournemouth or Watford team that have been in the Premier League for a few years. Stoke have a lot of quality. Swansea were there last year. Brentford were there last year. The list goes on. So, yeah, I think in terms of targets, if any fan says that they'll be unhappy with a playoff position, I think really we need to just have a bit of perspective as to how well this team is doing to be third. So with that in mind, let's go on to the news bites then and talk about some more tickets.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Okay, so Birmingham is sold out. That's the news this week. I actually had a look last night as there were about three left, so I can confirm that they've all gone. I said last week basically that the first tier of fans tickets, you know, the 4,000 plus points who had paid their season ticket renewal deadline by October 2nd. I thought, and I think a lot of people thought, they were just going to have all of the seats and that was going to be that, but that's not actually been the case. For the Birmingham tickets, they went down to anyone who had a season ticket this year or last year, and generally speaking, any member with over 1,000 points. I'm not sure how many people knew it went that low, but that really was as wide as the net was being cast for the Birmingham game. Now, there's a lot of factors at work here as to whether we should be surprised or even disappointed that it took this long to sell out 2,000 tickets for a game when fans haven't been able to go to games for so long. I think we have to be realistic that there's still a lot of people who don't feel comfortable going to games at the moment, and that's absolutely fine. If fans listening, you know, think, oh, I'll wait until it's back to 20K, or I'll wait until I've been vaccinated, or I wait until, you know, figures or whatever have got to a comfortable point, I think that's a perfectly reasonable point of view. And obviously, the fans who are older are going to have more points. Therefore, it's probably more likely that the fans who are older are going to be a bit more cautious. And, you know, that's such is how it goes. Also, some people might just not fancy it yet, which is totally fine as yet. So, yeah, well, as I say, I'm not sure that too many general members even realised they could go. But either way, they've all gone. The club's done well, so kudos to them. The Norwich and Luton games, as I record this, haven't been put up for sale yet. They haven't decided how they're going to do that yet. Probably be the same sort of system. And that's how it goes. Adam, I wanted to ask you about how, you know, there were kind of murmurs on Twitter of, oh, we're not going to sell out and all the sort of stuff. Obviously, we did, and we will continue to do so. But it has been surprisingly quiet, I suppose, in a way, how these tickets have gone.
Yeah, I think some people are still worried. No, fans, I'm sure they did social distance 100%, and I back the club on this. But it did seem that the fans, you know, looked close together, both on TV and from people's pictures on social media. And this COVID-19, you know, it spreads like wildfire. So I have absolutely, you know, I don't blame people at all, you know, if they don't want to go because of that. You know, some people have relatives that are shielding, some people, you know other people and are in close contact with them who have other relatives who are shielding and are quite vulnerable to this virus. So you know it's better to be safe than sorry. And you know, I hope that we can get this vaccination done and dusted as soon as possible so that everyone can go. You know, everyone, you know, supports the cause at Reading. And, you know, this is the reason why we've been so successful over the years, because everyone's in it together. And I hope that we can get those vaccinations sorted as soon as possible, get people back, get people cheering. And hopefully we can get as many people as we can out the other side of this, because, you know, it's not been a great year, but no, I mean, everyone's done very well to get through it. And, you know, it's great now that we've been rewarded and we've seen, you know, 2,000 fans go back in, and hopefully we get some more. But then you've got the other extreme where people don't really want to follow the rules in a way, not in a bad way, but and I don't really blame people for not wanting to face this kind of reality in the COVID world. I mean, for example, I found it quite hard actually in April, not April, but like May, June time at first, because of the amount of changes there were, even going to the supermarket and having to wear a mask. It's just, you know, I really dislike change, and I'm sure a lot of other people were like that. So yeah, I think that's another factor as well. So it's the both extremes, but you know, it's both putting fans off. But if you're in two minds about it and you feel like you're safe to go, I've heard from people that it was actually quite a good experience, a good safe experience, and you know, hopefully we can get tickets sold, you know, quicker than we did the other day. But no, I'm not really surprised. You know, I mean, you know, people take their own risks, and but no, the club I think have done very well on this. So fair play to them, and fair play to the fans who went and behaved themselves.
Well, absolutely. And for the women's team as well, there have been fans back in the mad stuff for that. There were scattering of fans for the 1-1 draw against Bristol City on the weekend. As perhaps it's, you know, it's good that obviously fans can go back, but to expect 2,000 fans to go for a women's game after this amount of time, with all of the caveats we've just been speaking about, it's good that they've got the opportunity to go back and to fill 2,000 perhaps was optimistic that they would sell out. There's loads of tickets left for the Man United game at home for the women's team on the 13th of December. Definitely encourage you to all go down to that. It's good football. It's two good teams, and it's supporting the Reading Football Club, which is something we love to do. The under-23s, they were in action, winning 3-2 at Boro last time out. They've got Burnley away on December 14th. The under-18s, they beat Norwich 5-2 on Saturday. They're 10th in the Premier League South at the moment. They've got Villa at home in the FA Youth Cup on Friday night, the 11th of December. That's live on YouTube. No fans, but live on YouTube, that game. And final piece of news bites for Reading this week is that we have Luton away in the FA Cup third round. Luton, a team that we played already in this season in the Carabao Cup, a game which they won. Now we can go to Kenilworth Road and play them again. So a lot of fans are not too bothered about that as an FA Cup game. But if we win it, then it doesn't matter who you face in the third round. We can always go. And maybe by the time that the fourth and fifth rounds roll on and Reading are in it, maybe we'll have a chance of someone good that we can go and watch. So, as I said, fans are back in for the Birmingham game. It's a sellout. Let's talk about it in big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Wednesday, 7:45 kickoff at the Mad Stad, and it is Birmingham at home for the Royals. Birmingham actually beat Bristol City on the weekend, 1-0 at Ashton Gate. Good win for them, third clean sheet in five games, but they've only scored five in their last seven. Birmingham are unbeaten in their last six trips to the Medeski Stadium. We can all remember that, what it must have been, 2008-09 or whatever year it was, they beat us to win promotion on final day. I'm not going to dwell on that. Yaku Mate has scored in all four of his starts versus Birmingham. And Aitor Karanka, these teams have never beaten a Reading team at the Mad Stad. So that's good omens there. Adam, how do you see this one playing out?
I think it'll be quite a tight game. I think we'll find Birmingham more of a challenge than some fans will think it will be. And they've conceded just 14 goals in, I think it's about 16 league games. So that's a good rate, actually, going at a rate of conceding less than a goal per game. And it's actually five less than us. I think we've conceded 19 goals so far this season. And the fact as well that they've only, I think, lost one away game, which was a 1-0 loss against leaders Norwich. So, you know, the stats for them look quite good. In terms of recent meetings, there's been nothing really to separate us. I think in the last sort of 10 or so meetings, you know, we've won an equal amount of games and drawn about two. So, yeah, I mean, the stats make it look like it's going to be a close game. I mean, but in terms of us, I mean, we've scored in all but about three of our games. You know, we didn't score against Stoke, Preston or Middlesbrough in that fact, but in the rest of our games, I think we've notched. So, you know, an unstoppable force meets a brick wall defence. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, I mean, Birmingham haven't scored many goals as well. That's why their goal difference is -2. So I don't think we'll see too much of an attacking threat from them, or hopefully not. But I think they'll be pretty solid in defence. So, yeah, that's perhaps where you'd want a winger in there. Perhaps you'd want a new signing in there. I forgot to mention earlier that Van La Parra, the player that we were supposedly linked to earlier on in the year, he's now joined a Spanish side, so we won't be signing him. But yeah, it feels like the type of game which could be frustrating at times. It could be like the Wigan game, but I feel like we're going to have quite a hard challenge going into this one.
Yeah, it's interesting with Birmingham because they are a team that is going to, I think ultimately they are likely to sit in and try and hit Scott Hogan or Lukas Jukovic long. The chances of them coming and you know, bounding out to Reading in an attacking sense are quite low. So Reading are looking at a game where they're probably going to have most of the ball again. They're probably going to have to create things against a really well-drilled defence. That's not really suited them too much this season, I have to say. Reading, I've always thought, are more comfortable on the counter-attacking, especially against teams that are perhaps of lower quality than them. And that does kind of worry me in a sense. And it makes me think that this game is going to be perhaps a bit of a slow burner. But unless Reading can get on the scoreboard early, Birmingham are going to settle in, do their jobs, go about their business. And we know for a fact that Birmingham are going to be happy to take a point out of this one.
Yeah, 100%. I actually remember the last meeting actually being the last game before the national lockdown. So yeah, that's very strange. But yeah, it will be a very tight game. You know, I can't see that much being between us, to be honest. No, this is a game on paper where perhaps fans are expecting maybe a 1 or 2 nil win, especially after, you know, playing against, you know, a Chris Hughton side, Nottingham Forest, who actually look quite good on paper with Joe Lolly and Anthony Knockhart on the wings. Knockhart got a very good reception from Reading fans at the weekend, I heard on TV. But yeah, especially with Bristol City as well, who are quite a good side, maybe fans are expecting quite a difficult, not difficult, but quite a comfortable win. And I have to say, I'm not expecting a comfortable win this weekend, this midweek. I have to say, I'm not expecting that at all.
No, well, Reading will go to QPR on the weekend after that for the Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff, which is a bit rare now for Reading. That's on December 12th. QPR being a team that generally pick up most of their points still at home. They've got fans back as well. And that will be a bit of a difficult one again, but one that Reading will probably be favourites for, depending on what happens on Wednesday night. And the Tarlas then, as always, will be back after that game to review the week's action. And the last thing then to do before we move on then is the predictions and the prediction league. All kinds of scores this week. Myself and Westy got a 1-1 from Sheffield Wednesday, so that's 3 points on board for both of us there. Sim got 2-0 versus Forest, while everyone else picked up a point with a win. So I have now jumped into the lead, in fact, with 14 points as I defend my title. Westy's on 12 points. Handbags, the early favourites, on 11. Sim on 7. Ollie on 6. For the Birmingham game, I'm going to say a 1-0 victory to Reading. Adam, what are you going to say for this one?
I'm going to go with the same as you, to be honest. I think 1-0 win. That's what I've got written down here. 1-0 win to Reading. I think either Yaku Meite or Lucas Zhao is going to get the winner. For me, I've been absolutely terrible at predicting Reading this season. Maybe I need to look at it as if I'm a neutral, because on the Super Six, I seem to be doing quite all right. But in terms of Reading, I've been absolutely terrible this year. The only score that I've got right was the 1-1 against Millwall away. But I'm going to go with a 1-0 Reading. I think, again, it'll be like the Wickham Wanderers game, where it took us quite a while to actually, you know, make a big impact. But yeah, I do think we'll win 1-0 and collect all 3 points again, fingers crossed. I think the fans will give us a boost.
You know, I'm just looking actually at the away form league table, and Birmingham scored 5 goals in 8 games away from home this year. We've only lost one of those, which is quite remarkable, against Norwich, which was a 1-0, funnily enough. But, you know, look at the luck. They've forced out, that's 5 unbeaten on the road. But they've been playing like QPR, Luton, Coventry, teams that are good teams, but ultimately they're not the cream of the crop of this league. And Reading like to think that's what they are. So we shall find out on Wednesday night if Reading can maintain their momentum. It's been an absolute pleasure having fans back in the stands this week. They'll be there again on Wednesday night. And again, thank you to all those who sent in their clips earlier in the show, including Velka Paunovic. And thank you, Adam, for popping on this week.
No worries, absolute pleasure as per.
And we will be back after the QPR game to review what might just be another 6 points on the board for the Royals. And who knows, maybe the referees are going to be continually on our favour this time. And as I say earlier on, it's just such a nice feeling to have fans back in the stands at Reading games. And now 2,000 it is this week. Hopefully in a couple months it'll be more towards 10,000, and then maybe by the end of the season we'll be looking at a full complement of Royals backing the boys towards the Premier League. Doesn't that just sound quite nice? Come on, you Hearts.